Right now, I'm standing in a hole. A 300-foot deep hole, to be exact. But even though I'm down here, I'm still connected to the entire job site. Because I have the new Sprint Direct Connect with apps like Workforce Locator. That lets me know my foreman, Mike, is...
Yeah, I'm here.
And I have three times the coverage, so I know that my most important delivery...
Just arrived.
And as part of the fastest push-to-talk, I can assemble my team the moment I need them. Guys?
On our way.
So now I can focus on turning this hole into a hotel.
Upgrade to the new Dunn. The new Sprint Direct Connect with three times the coverage and access to the fastest push-to-talk experience nationwide. Now when you buy one Motorola Admiral Rugged smartphone for $49.99, you'll get one free. To upgrade, call 800-SPRINT-1 or visit a Sprint store near you. Offer ends 1/10/13. Offer available to corporate liable accounts. Excludes taxes. Two-year agreement. $36 activation. Up to $350 early termination fee for devices. Fastest claim based on initial setup time for push-to-talk calls originating in Nextel or Sprint-owned 3G coverage. Coverage claim based on comparison of Nextel National Network square miles to Sprint National Network inclusive of roaming. Restrictions apply. See store.
What's your plan B? Is what you're doing taking you toward or away from your goals? Are you fulfilled? You can start over. The past is the past. This is a revolution of hope. We provide a way for extra income part or full time with a mission and vision of hope designed to inspire. This is the greatest movement on earth. Make a commitment to yourself and ask, what do you want your life to be like? Join us in our revolution of hope. Go to tellmeplanb.com or call 803-431-0775.
And now. Know what's going on in the political world. Know how it affects your world. This is Inside Politics with David Califf on the Starcom Radio Network.
Politics with David Califf, the show that covers the issues that affect you. And hopefully is having a great Monday. We got a great Monday show lined up, and the weekend is over, but we get some much-needed work to get to. It's time to get back to work, and we got a great Monday edition of Inside Politics lined up. But first, in the headlines, we all know that one of the issues we've been covering is Medicaid expansion in a number of GOP-controlled, GOP governors-led states have been saying no to Medicaid expansion. And one of those states is North Carolina, which has refused and said no to Medicaid expansion. And they're already seeing some of the negative effects. Valiant Health System in Bee Haven, North Carolina, is being forced to shut down. And according to reports, it could have stayed open. Could have stayed open if North Carolina would have said yes to Medicaid expansion. This hospital is in a low-income area, and many of its clients or patients are low-income, in poverty, low-income residents. And them saying no to Medicaid expansion in North Carolina has already seen the effects, already a hospital being forced to shut down. Just another example of the bad policies coming from Governor Pat McCrory in the legislature in North Carolina. But speaking of states and unpopular governors, today it's all about Governor Tom Corbett in Pennsylvania, who's been in the headlines lately, in his stance against gay marriage. In the state of Pennsylvania back in 1996, they made it a state law making it illegal for gay and lesbian couples to marry. And just recently, the ACLU filed a federal lawsuit in court, and Governor Corbett is going to fight that lawsuit tooth and nail, and it's going to cost you. It's not going to cost Governor Corbett. It's going to cost you, the taxpayers, over $400 to $500 an hour to fight this lawsuit. And the it's not going to be fought primarily through the state due to the state attorney general saying Kathleen Kane withdrawing from the suit. No, they're privatizing it out to a law firm called Lamb McClurland, PC of Westchester, which is headed by William H. Lamb, a former state Supreme Court justice with huge Republican ties and a buddy of Corbett's. Some ethical concerns there, I would say. But this is a double insult to the people and citizens of the state of Pennsylvania. Not only are they going against the will of the people in the state, because throughout the whole country, people are against banning gay marriage. People are actually for gay marriage, not just in Pennsylvania, but the whole United States, poll after poll, and numbers just keep rising in favor of support of gay marriage. But asking the taxpayers to actually foot the bill to fight something that they're not for, not just in Pennsylvania, but around the country. And Governor Corbett, who right now is one of the most unpopular governors in the country, is going to spend all this amount of taxpayer money on an unpopular issue and something that we're seeing other states go the opposite way, other states like Maryland and Delaware actually making same-sex marriage legal in those states. And these are the same guys that call themselves fiscally conservative. Not by action, only by words. And joining us today to discuss this topic is Mr. Walter Brash. He's joining us live via the phone from Pennsylvania, syndicated columnist and author. And hi, Walter. Thanks for joining us live on Inside Politics.
Thank you very much, David. Always a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure as here as well. And you're actually calling us from Pennsylvania. And in Pennsylvania, they made it a state law back in 1996 to ban gay marriage in the state, making it illegal for gay and lesbian couples to marry in the state of Pennsylvania. Wow, a lot's changed from 1996 to today.
Well, the interesting thing is that the law that was created back in the mid-90s was a reaction by the extreme right wing, because they were on a huge campaign to really prove about how right wing they are and how moral they were. That's also about the time that the Boy Scouts decided that they couldn't have any gays in the Boy Scouts. So in Pennsylvania, we had a law that we hadn't had before that banned gay marriage. Now we have a situation where the federal courts, the Supreme Court, not just a federal court, but the Supreme Court, has said, excuse us, but, you know, we have some opinions on this. And the state says, we don't care. And the Attorney General says what's going on violates the federal law, which supersedes state law. But the governor apparently trying to go to the, you know, few people that are left in his base are placating them by pursuing this. And there's no question in the world he's going to lose because federal precedent trumps state precedent on constitutional issues.
And they're definitely losing, not just, you're right, not just the political argument, the public opinion argument. They're losing it in the courts as well. We saw that with the Supreme Court cases just earlier this summer. And, you know, this, you're right, this was passed back in the mid-90s when they were on their sugar hate high after DOMA was passed. And this lawsuit was filed by the ACLU. It's going to be a federal lawsuit. And in response, Governor Corbett is going to fight the lawsuit, but it's going to cost taxpayers in the state of Pennsylvania, where you live, up to $500 an hour. And this law firm that was privatized to, these associates could make up to $325 an hour. Outrageous.
And we're talking not, you know, a few hours of work. This is going to take hundreds of hours of work. And I suspect to defend this, it's going to be at least $500,000.
Wow, and this is the fiscally conservative bunch. And the Attorney General, Kathleen Keene, said no. She refused to enter into the lawsuit.
Yeah, and Tom Corbett's response is, well, she's a Democrat, of course, you know. That's why she's doing it. It's political. Well, Kathleen Keene said no, it's because that's what the law is, and I'm the Attorney General of the state, and I've determined that it is not worth pursuing this because we have to spend our resources in other things that are far more valuable than this, you know, like catching criminals.
Yeah, maybe following the Constitution as well, because this is definitely violating people's equal rights under the Equal Protection Clause. And you're right, Governor Corbett is now shouting and screaming, saying that, oh, you know, the reason that we privatized this out to this law firm, which is head by one of his buddies, but, you know, the reason we had to privatize is because the Attorney General didn't want to do her job.
Yeah, well, you know, the Attorney General is doing her job because it is to interpret the law and to enforce the law. And even though Pennsylvania has it on the books, it's, again, you know, how much resources are we going to spend defending something that is going to be lost anyhow in the federal courts? when the time and the energy and the money should be spent on pursuing white-collar criminals, pursuing other kinds of criminals, looking at antitrust issues, things that, you know, really matter, as opposed to what the governor wants to do to protect, I guess, his little standing that he has with the right-wing Tea Party.
And it seems like the governor of your state, Corbett, it seems like he's busy tying up the state and federal courts. I remember the voter ID battle where they couldn't come up with one example, not one example of voter fraud. But, you know, it seems like, much like the governor of South Carolina where we broadcast our show, Governor Haley, it seems like the only thing they're good at is getting the state into lawsuits.
Well, in fact, he even got the state into spending about $500,000, again with a private law firm, to pursue a suit against the NCAA for having sanctions against Penn State. Now, the NCAA probably went overboard on the sanctions against Penn State on the Sandusky case, but that's not the issue. The issue is the federal court threw that suit out pretty quickly because Governor Corbett did not have standing. See, he's on the Board of Trustees of Penn State, but Penn State, Pennsylvania State University, is not a state university. It is a private university. Therefore, Tom Corbett was representing a private university using public funds. And the court basically said, you don't have standing to sue. $500,000 worth of legal fees.
And it seems like he's really, as you mentioned earlier, getting the state involved in issues that really aren't the serious issues facing the state. Actually, you know, going into gay marriage and then football.
Yeah, you know, like football, you know, if you spent $500,000, he's cut everything else. But let's say that he was probably trying to do this to get back a few of the fans that had already deserted him because of two things. One is that when he was the Attorney General, he did not pursue aggressively Jerry Sandusky for years. And Corbett was a longtime Attorney General, and basically did not pursue Sandusky, apparently because he wanted to keep Penn State fans or whatever. And secondly, and just as important, is the fact that Tom Corbett went after Joe Paterno. And he was the one on the board that really convinced the board to fire Paterno, although there was no evidence that Paterno was involved with the cover-up. There was no court action against him. The grand jury, in fact, said that he was not involved in that. So he went after Joe Paterno, and now all of a sudden all the Penn State fans are saying, gee, I'm Corbett, you screwed up and you didn't do your job properly. So apparently he thought, well, I can bring these fans back into my base by suing the NCAA and making everybody happy. The only thing he made is $500,000 worth of taxpayer funds, and this is a governor that had been slashing all kinds of budgets. The education budget,
yeah,
slashed by half the funding for the state-owned universities, and that was about $1 billion. He slashed programs for the disabled, the state parks and the forests, for child care services, things that benefit everybody and the middle class and the lower classes. But, you know, and while he was doing that, he also extended tax benefits to the rich. So, you know, I mean, his austerity program apparently means everybody who's not in the 1% gets to suffer.
Yeah, it's amazing that Governor Corbett, you know, these guys and gals, they always say we don't have money for this program, the program for the poor, elderly, the disabled, but, you know, we have money to fight lawsuits that we know we're going to lose anyway in court.
Exactly. And here's another thing about Tom Corbett. While he's complaining about the state not having enough money and doing all kinds of things, well, he took trips to Chile, Brazil, and France, and Germany on, you know, is there a reason why a governor of a state that has financial problems goes to foreign countries and he says, well, it's to get business back to Pennsylvania? Well, you know, there's a lot of business throughout the country that he could have brought to Pennsylvania and not had to travel to all those places. And then he compounds this by saying that Pennsylvania is a great place to vacation, takes all media out on these tours throughout the state, which is that taxpayer fund, to show the media, and hopefully they would write about the great vacation land that Pennsylvania is. Except that he bought a vacation home in Hilton Head, South Carolina.
That's kind of like,
what kind of stupid is that?
It's kind of like Nikki Haley using taxpayer money to go to Paris and saying she was there to create jobs and didn't create any jobs there.
Actually, I doubt that he brought back a whole lot of jobs, because when you take a look at the reality, Pennsylvania, when he became governor 3 years ago, was seventh in job creation among the 50 states. Now, last year, it was 49th. So, apparently, going to Chile and France, he lost jobs.
While he got a nice vacation at taxpayers' expense.
Yeah, I just don't understand what's in Corbett's mind, other than the fact that he's been bought by the oil companies.
And then you look at the law firm that received the privatization of the contract for this lawsuit. It's called Lamb McCurlin of Westchester, Pennsylvania, and it's headed by William H. Lamb, a former state Supreme Court justice, a Republican state Supreme Court justice. You know, I think, you know, there's some ethical concerns there, too. It's privatized, and he gives it out. I mean, there's not a law firm out there that's not one of his buddies.
Exactly. Well, see, Tom Corbett wants to privatize everything. I don't even know why he became a governor if he wants to privatize. He wanted to privatize the turnpike, which the Fed said, excuse us, we don't think that's a good idea. He wanted to privatize the lottery. Now, this is a operation that makes money, brings money in for the senior citizen programs. He wanted to privatize that. Not only that, he had already contacted a British company to take over the lottery. Now, that's not even an American company. Now, I have nothing against the British, but he's going to privatize it by selling it to the British. He wants to privatize the liquor stores in Pennsylvania. He says the government should not be selling liquor, except the liquor stores made money last year and the year before. And the reason he wants to privatize the liquor stores is because all the clerks are unionized, and Tom Corbett hates the unions.
So basically, with Governor Corbett, because he's giving all these contracts out to his buddies, like the law firm of Lamb McCurlin, basically the governor's mansion's for sale.
Yeah, basically it is. And in fact, he recently, well, the Department of Environmental Protection in Pennsylvania, which really isn't doing a great job of protecting our environment, the person that was head of that for 2 years had come to that agency from being a lawyer that represented gas and oil industry. So for 2 years, he basically did the same thing as the DEP head. Then he resigned and went back to the same firm where he's representing gas and oil interests. So we got privatization there of some sort. Two of his top PR people left recently, and they went into PR agencies where they're representing the oil and gas industry. Because Tom Corbett believes that we ought to frack Pennsylvania, and he's doing a really good job of that.
And for our listeners, you know, privatization basically means we're selling out for our lobbyists. Our lobbyists are going to donate to our campaigns. In exchange, we're going to give them the contracts to privatize it. That's all privatization means to these guys and gals. It's not about better services, better performance, all about big payola.
And definitely, when you privatize, the odds of having a unionized workforce are almost nil. And, you know, Tom Corbett, again, he doesn't believe in unions. He wants to make Pennsylvania a right-to-work state, just like South Carolina and some Oklahoma and a few other states. And he says that will save money. Well, I'm not sure how that's going to save money, since unionized workers have benefits. They have salary that they can spend, and they buy things, which helps our economy. And the one thing I guess that he doesn't understand, or probably he does understand but doesn't care, is unions also allow people who have been unfairly disciplined or who are taken advantage of in the workplace or overworked or forced to work split shifts and become tired because of long hours. unions protect workers against that, and workplace conditions, safety, and health. And apparently he doesn't care about that.
Unbelievable. And, you know, and I'm glad that the ACLU filed this lawsuit. It's a much-needed lawsuit. And, you know, the ACLU filing this lawsuit, they're saying that it violates the Equal Protection Clause. And, you know, the Equal Protection Clause saying that all men and women are granted the same protections under the Equal Protection Clause. And that should include marriage if you read the wording of the Constitution.
Yeah, the ACLU has also filed suit against the state on the voter ID laws. Like you mentioned earlier, they can't prove that there's been any fraud committed. So it's sort of like we're going to create a bunch of laws that will eliminate voters, primarily the disenfranchised anyhow, the poor and the middle class and a large minority population, just because they want to do that. So the ACLU has filed suit against the state that now has to defend that nonsense. And the courts have already postponed it twice, saying that there was not sufficient notice, people don't have the ability to follow these laws under the time frames that the state wanted. And one of the leaders of the Republicans, one of the elected leaders, had actually said on the record that the reason for the voter ID is to help elect Mitt Romney.
Wow. Yeah, you're right. And he was the leader of the House GOP. This wasn't just some layperson. This was actually one of the leaders of the GOP state, the GOP in the state of Pennsylvania. And I don't understand politicians like Governor Corbett and fighting gay rights and people's right to marry. Do they not believe that gay people are human too? Because equal protection says all people, men and women, are entitled to the same rights under the Equal Protection Clause. That includes regardless of your sexual orientation.
Yep. Apparently Tom Corbett, who had been an attorney general and a prosecutor and a lawyer, I don't know if he really got A's in his law school classes, because there are certain things that he's pandering to a certain demographic in Pennsylvania, but it's not the one that matters, and the one that matters is the courts. Now, what the response of the Tea Party has always been is that these activist courts, you know, they're the problem. Well, under our Constitution, they're the ones that matter. And whether they're activists or not activists, and since the Supreme Court of the United States leans to the right, apparently they think that the conservatives are now activists on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I always find that fascinating when they're always complaining about the liberal courts. I forget the Supreme Court has had a conservative majority for decades now. I guess to forget about the Scalias and the Clarence Thomases of the world. And you look at what's going on here. I mean, House Speaker John Boehner did something similar where he spent over $2.3 million in taxpayer money to unsuccessfully defend DOMA in the Supreme Court, which was declared unconstitutional in June. This is over $2 million. I guess, you know, he doesn't mind. This is the same guy that's spent $50 million in failed Obamacare repeal votes.
You know, the thing that often amazes me, and it really shouldn't, is how our conservatives keep yelling and screaming about austerity, and we got to slash the budget, and we got to be more responsible. And yet they spend like, I hate to say drunken sailors, because even drunken sailors have some integrity, but that's exactly what they are looking like, is that somebody that just got the paycheck and they have to waste it on a craps game.
Right. And Governor Corbett is a very unpopular governor. I believe his poll numbers are around the 30s, I believe.
Yeah, they're deep in the 30s. They're about the same as a Harry Ward, I think.
Wow. Well, I guess the positive for Governor Corbett could be that his approval numbers aren't lower than Congress.
That's right. And, you know, I guess Congress' approval rating is down even below the worst used car dealer imaginable. But Corbett, you know, some of his numbers are a little bit higher among certain Republicans, but even the Republicans thinking we got to do a better job than we have been. And I think, you know, some of the people I've talked to kind of hope he may want to retire early, take his state pension, and, like, join a law firm and make a lot more money, because I think he's become an embarrassment. Now, he's not all by himself. He's got both houses of the legislature, the House and the Senate, both are Republican-controlled, and they are sort of like pretend minor league U.S. Senate and House in that they don't do anything.
And many people are calling Governor Corbett a lame-duck governor because he's in the 30s, and he's up for re-election next year, and it doesn't look good when a year out from re-election you're in the 30s in your approval ratings.
No, and there's no way I see him being able to improve his popularity. You know, he's changed his PR people, okay? So, big deal, you know? You change your PR people, so you want to give the people a better image? Well, try dealing with important issues first, and then let the image follow. But I think he's going about it backwards. It's sort of like, well, if they don't like me, it must be because I have a bad PR staff. So he changed them and brought in new PR people. You know, you can't sell something that's dirty.
Right, and I guess people like Corbett and the whole GOP forget it's not about PR campaigns and image and marketing. It's about policies, and that's what the American people want to see, is are your policies working for them or against them? And, you know, I believe that this, him fighting this ACLU lawsuit, I think this could go, this possibly has possibility of going all the way to the Supreme Court.
Oh, yeah. I think that the one in Pennsylvania, it's going to set a precedent, I believe. Enough of a precedent, because it's in the federal courts. So I think it's going to set enough of a precedent that Pennsylvania is probably going to lose on this one. I can't predict what any kind of a court will do, but what's going to happen? Let's say that Corbett loses at the federal district court level. He's going to appeal to the appellate court, more money. It's going to cost the state. He goes to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court's going to say, you know, we don't reverse ourselves, you know. That's just a basic fact of the Supreme Court. They don't reverse themselves.
And we know how the victory, the huge victory for gay marriage proponents and people, freedom proponents this year with the cases. You're right, this could be just another huge victory for supporters of marriage equality.
Yeah, exactly. Corbett should have just cut his losses and moved on and done something else. Again, you know, the state itself has favorable when it comes to gay marriage. We're talking both Republican and Democrat, not by a huge majority by any means, but enough that it's, you know, not like 8%, you know, every gay marriage. America has been shifting over the past few years, and Corbett and the Tea Party have maintained the fact that they have apparently a biblical admonishment to prohibit gay marriage as unbiblical or whatever it is that they're doing. But, you know, even the Pope has said, who am I to judge?
That's true. And what's ironic is if he fights this in court, he won't even be, you know, and gets the state embarrassed, he won't even be governor come next year, so he won't be there for the embarrassment. That's the shameful part of it. But Walter, thank you so much for coming on, and you have a new book called Fracking Pennsylvania. And for our listeners, how can they read or learn more about your book?
Yeah, Fracking Pennsylvania actually talks about Governor Corbett's role in bringing fracking to the state, and the fact that he had $1.8 million from the gas industry. And there's all kinds of connections to the gas industry and Tom Corbett and his buddies. Fracking Pennsylvania, you can get that from Amazon.com or your local bookstore. It's all over the place, I hope. And it really talks not just about Pennsylvania, but about the entire country, what's going on with our natural gas industry and what the problems are with health and the environment.
Wow, it's definitely a much-needed book about an important topic. Doesn't get talked about enough. As for our listeners, make sure to check it out. That's Fracking Pennsylvania by our guest tonight, Walter Brash. And Walter, thanks so much for coming on. Enjoy the rest of your Monday.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. And we're about to head into a commercial break. You're listening to Inside Politics. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Right now, I'm standing in a hole. Right now, I'm standing in a hole, a 300-foot deep hole to be exact. But even though I'm down here, I'm still connected to the entire job site because I have the new Sprint Direct Connect with apps like Workforce Locator that lets me know my foreman, Mike, is...
Yeah, I'm here.
And I have three times the coverage, so I know that my most important delivery...
Just arrived.
And as part of the fastest push-to-talk, I can assemble my team the moment I need them. Guys?
On our way.
So now I can focus on turning this hole into a hotel.
Upgrade to the new Dunn. The new Sprint Direct Connect with three times the coverage and access to the fastest push-to-talk experience nationwide. Now when you buy one Motorola Admiral Rugged smartphone for $49.99, you'll get one free. To upgrade, call 800-SPRINT-1 or visit a Sprint store near you. Offer ends 1/10/13. Offer available to corporate liable accounts. Excludes taxes. Two-year agreement. $36 activation. Up to $350 early termination fee for devices. Fastest claim based on initial setup time for push-to-talk calls originating in Nextel or Sprint-owned 3G coverage. Coverage claim based on comparison of Nextel National Network square miles to Sprint National Network inclusive of roaming. Restrictions apply. See store.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for low-quality photos? Looking for realistic prices for great quality photos for weddings, birthdays, special events, up to any occasion? Check out Eternal Designs 9 at eternaldesigns9.com or 803-665-1024. We outflash the competition.
What's your plan B? Is what you're doing taking you toward or away from your goals? Are you fulfilled? You can start over. The past is the past. This is a revolution of hope. We provide a way for extra income, part or full-time, with a mission and vision of hope designed to inspire. This is the greatest movement on earth. Make a commitment to yourself and ask, what do you want your life to be like? Join us in our revolution of hope. Go to tellmeplanb.com or call 803-431-0777.
And you are Inside Politics with David Califf, the show that covers the issues that affect you. And hope everybody's having a great Monday. And before we get back into the second half of our show, there's been a lot in the headlines. And one issue that we've talked about on the show is this outrageous anti-homeless plan that was tried to put in place with the Columbia City Council, which basically would make it illegal to be homeless in the city of Columbia, banning being homeless in Columbia, and basically putting them into concentration camps. That's right, a concentration camp. And thankfully, they help in part thanks to you, the listeners, thanks to the people in Columbia, South Carolina, and around the country. There was a huge pushback, also thanks to petitions that we put out and phone calls and the media for exposing it. Even international media got involved. It was defeated because on Thursday, the Columbia City Council backtracked on their plan, saying we're not going to go through with it. It's not because they had a change of heart. It's because of the backlash from the people of Columbia and the people around the country and around the world. And this is another example of how you, the people, have the power. You, the people, have the power to change things. And we're glad that this outrageous attack on the homeless was defeated. But today is a continuation of our coverage of the war on women, and there's been plenty of examples to choose from. And the latest is from the state of Iowa. In Iowa, we all know last week was Labor Day weekend. And how they decide to celebrated in Iowa? Well, officials in Iowa, on that Friday of Labor Day weekend, decided to put in place an outrageous proposal to make it harder for a woman in her right to choose. And basically what the Iowa Board of Medicine did was they voted to eliminate the largest telemedicine abortion program in the country, meaning that doctors in the state won't be able to use video technology to prescribe abortion-inducing drugs to rural and low-income women who don't have the means, the transportation, to get to the nearest clinic. And in Iowa, just in the last year or two alone, over 3,000 women have used this program. And this board did this despite the healthcare professionals being against that, being in support of telemedicine program, and they did it against any evidence that there's any harmfulness done to people that use the telemedicine program. So this is just another outrageous example of the war on women going against evidence and instead just going on your political beliefs. Political beliefs. And joining us tonight to discuss this topic is Ms. Karen Teagarden. She's founder of UniteWomen.org, and she's been a guest on the show in the past. And hello, Karen. Thanks for joining us live on Inside Politics.
Thank you for having me, David.
It's a pleasure to have you on. And you're a founder of UniteWomen.org. For our listeners, a little bit about what your organization does.
Yes, well, we formed a little over a year and a half ago. A friend of mine and I were talking about all of the legislation and rhetoric occurring around the country against women. The transvaginal ultrasound probe law was occurring in Virginia, and that all panel of men testifying on our behalf regarding contraception and Sandra Fluke being denied testimony was occurring, and we kept saying, what is it going to take for women, for people to get on the street about this? And so we created a group to organize rallies, and in 10 weeks we held 55 rallies in 45 states, unite against the war on women. And within about a week of that, I realized that we had something a little bit more than organizing rallies, and started forming an organization and created UniteWomen.org. And we now, well, we're approaching about 85,000 likes on our Facebook page, and we're on all social media platforms. So we have a very huge social media presence, but we have state groups in all of the states, and definitely do work in individual states, but also on a national level. Some of the things that we're focusing on going forward is continuing expanding on our Unite Against Rape campaign and voting rights and education. There are some very key elections coming up, gosh, in maybe a month. The U.S. Senate race in New Jersey, and then big elections in November for both New Jersey and Virginia. So we're working on that, and then continuing our voting work through the 2014 election.
Wow, you guys are doing some great work. And I know one of the issues that you've probably been focusing on is these outrageous things that are doing from state to state, attacking a woman's right to choose, attacking women's health programs. And the latest example was Iowa. Doing it on Labor Day weekend, doing it sneakily, they thought they could do it sneakily, basically eliminating the telemedicine program in Iowa, which is a hugely popular program, particularly with rural areas, low-income women in rural areas, and I believe over 10 to 12 million people have used this program in the country, and the board voted to eliminate it in the state of Iowa.
Yes, and there have been many states that have either written that in some of their laws or tried to pass it, but many of the states don't even offer the services. But Iowa definitely does, and as you mentioned, it's one of the largest. And just to give people a little bit of background on telemedicine, this is not a new endeavor. It was something that was created actually in the 60s to treat astronauts in space. Obviously, it's advanced since then, and has become pretty standard medical practice. And in about the last 5 years, it's really grown, and like you said, treats well over 10 million Americans. But what's very interesting is this is very typical of the approach that the anti-choice groups have taken on pretty much every other issue. They're putting out rhetoric to scare people. They are saying that telemedicine, what it is their webcam abortions, drumming up fear that it's robot doctors operating on women, that it's so far from the truth. All it is, as you can imagine, it involves a doctor prescribing a pill over video chat. And as you said, this benefits millions of people and certainly benefits millions of women in their first trimester non-surgical medicine-induced abortions, which are the safest way to the safest versions of abortions. And all the studies show that the telemedicine abortions are as safe as if you were going to go to a doctor's office live in your first trimester. There's no difference. They try to say that this is all for the safety of women, which is what they say on every aspect of all the legislation they try to pass, and that's just not true. And the other thing that people should know is that this does affect rural and poor women more than anybody. But rural communities are about 20% of the U.S. population, but they only have 9% of physicians.
Yeah, there's a huge lack of doctors in rural areas, and most of Iowa is rural. And
yes.
And they're making it seem like, oh, it's just, as you mentioned, a robot doctor. There's a nurse or a nurse provider, a medical staff in the room with the patient, and the doctor is just basically on video conference, just giving their input, advice, instructions, or prescription over the video conference, the use of video technology. I mean, there's nothing unsafe about that. It's been hugely popular over the last couple of years. It has a 95% satisfaction rate with women who have used this program. And according, there's a statement from Planned Parenthood Heartland President Jill June says that this decision is a political attack aimed at restricting access to abortion in Iowa. Proponents of this rule aren't against telemedicine technology. They're against safe legal abortions and are unjustly targeting our system with no scientific information or evidence to back up their claims.
Absolutely. It's very political. In fact, this Board of Medicine that you have referred to, the Iowa Governor, Terry Branstad, handpicked these people when he came into office. Because this was something that was brought up, I believe, in 2010, and no changes were made. But once he was able to change all of the board members, which were all anti-choice Republicans, all 10 of them, then he did another review, and this what the consequences of that is. And this is why it's so important for people to get to the polls this fall if you have elections going on, and I don't care how far down the ballot these elections are, it's all important. And then there are some key races, and then obviously in 2014, look, there's so many people do not show up in midterm elections, and what we're going through right now is because people did not show up in 2010.
And that's really scary what this governor in Iowa has done, and other governors and politicians, is stacking up a board that makes healthcare decisions with people that fit your political ideology and views, rather than stacking up people based on experience, people that are well qualified for the job, and are going to look at stuff based on evidence, empirical evidence. Instead, they handpicking people that are going to carry out their anti-abortion views. I think that's really scary when you have a medical board not basing stuff based on what's best for patients across the state, but more based on pushing their political agenda.
Or religious. One of the members is a priest.
Wow, wow. And as you mentioned, who's going to be heard is low-income woman in rural areas. Over 3,000 rural women have used the program since 2008.
Yeah, I think it's something like 87% of all U.S. counties and 97% of all rural counties. 97% of all rural counties have no abortion provider. So by taking this telemedicine away, guess what it does?
Basically gives them no options.
Yeah. I mean, these are people who can't afford to drive into some big city. And first of all, this type of abortion requires two pills taken at different times. So what they're saying is that these people not only have to schedule an appointment with someone in a city that provides this type of service, but they have to go twice. And it's taking a pill. That's all it is.
Wow. And what they're doing, there have been other states that have gone one step further and wrote in laws making it illegal to even have this program. Wow.
Yeah.
It's definitely...
The interesting thing is that they're coming at it from both sides. This is a procedure that takes place in the first trimester. Versus, then on the other end of it, that we've got the 20-week bans, the 16-week bans, in some of the states, I think, 9-week bans. So they want to do away with abortions that are, you know, in the second trimester. And now this take away an awful lot of opportunities for poor and rural people to even have their abortion taken care of in the first trimester when it's the safest. So this has nothing to do with safety.
And it's a backdoor, sneaky attempt at limiting a woman's right to choose. They know that their options are limited because it is constitutional. It is a woman's right. Roe versus Wade, and this is just a backdoor, sneaky way of trying to eliminate a woman's right to choose in many areas of the state of Iowa.
Yes, but once again, you know, all of these efforts in all the states, and even now on the federal level, are really designed to get this to the Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade. Because this will be challenged, because this board is not supposed to, as you mentioned at the beginning of the program, it's written that they are not to be making these kinds of decisions unless there is solid evidence to prove that it's necessary. And not only is there no solid evidence, there's evidence to the exact opposite. You know, these procedures are absolutely safe.
And a lot of people are saying this is going to be the new battle, that they're going to continue to do this in all the states where they have any type of control, whether in the state house or the governor's mansion.
Yes, and so many of these states, like I said, don't even offer these services, but it'll be preemptive. They'll make it law anyway.
And there's a lack of Planned Parenthood clinics in the state of Iowa. I believe there's less than three, maybe one to two clinics in the whole state. So that's what makes the telemedicine program even more important in many of the states in the heartland states, so states like Iowa.
Well, this is the second phase. The first phase was to do whatever they could to eliminate as many clinics as they could, and now take away the only option that so many women have with fewer clinics.
Wow, wow. First it's eliminating Planned Parenthood and then eliminating access through video technology, the telemedicine program for Planned Parenthood clinics.
Yeah. So many of these laws, and whether it's defunding Planned Parenthood or, you know, a lot of the restrictions they're placing on clinics so that it makes it financially impossible for these clinics to stay open. Many of these laws are being challenged, and the amount of money that is being used, taxpayer money, to defend these laws, it's so sad, and none of these laws should have passed or even introduced. But that's what happens when you don't show up to vote. Sorry to keep going back to the vote, but we need people to get to the polls. I don't care if you think that your one vote isn't going to count. Every vote is going to count this time.
You're right, and we're seeing it in some of these states where they're making it illegal at a certain amount of time, whether it's less than 15, less than 10 weeks, 12 weeks. In some states like Arkansas, these fetal heartbeat bills, that it's going to, you know, they know it's going to end up in courts, and that could be their long-term goal, but they're not paying the cost. It's you, us, the taxpayers. You know, much like we, in our first segment, we talked about Pennsylvania and gay marriage, federal lawsuit. You know, it seems like they don't mind tying up the states with outrageous cost and legal fees that the taxpayer has to pay.
Exactly. Ohio is gearing up for when their legislative session starts up in October. Heart bill is expected to be introduced. So, this isn't ending. And the only way we're going to be able to solve it, other than all these lawsuits, is to get these people out of office, either the end of this year or in 2014.
And that's also what I find funny, is that there's definitely a GOP war on women. And then whenever they hear it brought up, whether through radio or any type of media, television, or any regular conversation, social media, or in-person conversations face-to-face, they'll say that, what war on women? I mean, how many examples do people need? You got Iowa, you got all these states, and then at the federal level with Bow Wow and cuts to domestic violence programs, equal pay equity. I mean, you can go down the list of examples. It's not what example, it's which one do you want to choose from.
Exactly. I mean, we're being hit on everything. And the thing is that when we're hit, there are many other groups that are hit. First of all, women of color, any statistics you take in terms of rape, violence, equal pay, much worse for women of color. But, you know, we're all fighting the same oppressors. And, you know, we all need to stand up to these same oppressors with one voice, because that's the only way we're going to win this.
And then when the whole Anthony Weiner texting scandal came out, the Fox and the right-wing media was trying to push that, oh, you know, why isn't there anybody saying that there's a war on women about Anthony Weiner? And, you know, everyone says what Anthony Weiner did was despicable, and that other mayor from San Diego, Anthony Weiner, who's running for mayor in New York City. But, you know, that's one person with a couple different individuals. But these policies affect millions of women across the whole United States. That's what really affects people.
Yes, you've definitely heard them talking about how, you know, this proves that there's a democratic war on women. Here's the difference. What some individuals do with their private life is not a war on women. It's stupidity. It's their own issue. There are Republicans and Democrats who do that. But they do, whatever they are doing does not affect me and the millions of women who are being turned away from being able to get the health services that they need. It's the Republican legislators and legislation that is doing that to women. It is the Republican legislator and legislation that is keeping equal pay at bay. It is Republicans who voted against the Violence Against Women Act. And, of course, now they're claiming they voted for it as they're running for office.
Yeah, Mitch McConnell.
Because they voted for the version that excluded groups of women. But they did not vote the one that actually passed.
Wow, it's pretty slimy. You bring up a great point that what Anthony Weiner or Bill Clinton or any politician does, or Mark Sanford, they forget their own party, what any individual does.
Is it bitter?
It's,
I mean, come on. These indiscretions or whatever you want to call them, they don't belong to one party. They all do it.
Right. And it's between their wife, family, or in any case, or in Mark Sanford's case, his mistress. You know, there's a lot of different examples to pull from. But in terms of what...
It does not affect me as a woman.
Right.
It does
right.
not affect me. What does affect me is when they vote against my best interest. And that's what the Republicans are doing.
And what are some of your members saying about what's happening in Iowa? I know there's been a lot of states that have been doing these shenanigans. But what some of your members from maybe Iowa have been saying about what they're doing?
Well, like you said before we started talking on the show, that, signing petitions, getting the word out that this is taking place, while we may not win a lot of these battles in terms of turning around laws, the more that people are aware, the better the chances we will be able to have some sort of reaction or remedy. And, we're all trying to just get the word out that this is what these legislators are doing. And focus. Right now, for example, we're putting together graphics that specifically for each race, and we just did one for a couple of them for the Virginia races that are coming up, on the candidates and how they voted in Virginia on legislation that has taken place since 2011. So then all we ask is, which candidate stands for women? So, we're not the only ones doing that. I mean, you've got a lot of organizations that are endorsing women-friendly candidates. Emily's List, obviously, the National Organization for Women, the Feminist Majority, I mean, Planned Parenthood, they're all rating candidates based on their votes for women, and they're not going to be able to hide behind it. We're going to be screaming it out. It's very frustrating because there's not a whole lot we can do right now except protest and scream. And because in these states like Iowa and Ohio and Texas and North Carolina and Michigan and Wisconsin, I mean, because all the states where there are Republican governors and Republican House and Senate, there's not a whole lot we can do to turn this around until we get them out of office. But we have to start playing it out now. We can't wait until the election to make people aware of what they're doing.
Yeah. Well said. We got to start early because that's what they're doing. They're pulling their resources and starting right now. But Karen, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I know your organization is doing a lot of great things along with others. And for our listeners, how can they learn more about what your organization does and some of the things that you're doing and join the fight?
Well, certainly go to our website, unitewomen.org. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/unitewomen, or follow us on Twitter, at unitewomen.org. And if you go onto our Facebook page or even our website, you can click and find out how you can get involved in our state groups. There's a link to each state group if you want to get involved.
Wow. Well, Karen, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and keep up the great work.
Thank you so much, David.
And Iowa is just another example. Whenever these folks say that there's no GOP war on women, how many examples do you need, whether it's Arkansas or South Dakota or Iowa attacking women's right to choose or attacking Planned Parenthood, which provides access to millions of low-income women, or whether it's cutting funding for domestic violence programs, the WIC program, food stamp programs that help single mothers, programs that help single moms, or whether it's cutting education programs for children, or whether it's attacks on the Single Pay Equity Act, or against the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act for equal pay for equal days work. There's plenty of examples. It's not which example there is. It's which one do you want to choose from? But that's it for tonight's show. You can email the show at insidepolitics@ymail.com, insidepolitics@ymail.com. Until next time, I'm out.